Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Does Mother Nature know better than modern science? And could we all live more satisfying lives if we just stepped back from industrial food production and contemporary consumer practices? Even a question as simple as what kind of milk to drink, let alone whether to drink it at all, can become fraught with tension if we try to balance the relative risks and benefits of pasteurized versus unpasteurized dairy products. And then there are the vehement debates over how to manage the environment, bring babies into the world, raise and distribute food, and protect ourselves from disease. Raised by parents fiercely committed to living by nature's rules, journalist Nathaniel Johnson weighed all of these issues as he prepared to be a father himself for the first time. He shares what he discovered in his new book, All Natural, A Skeptic's Quest to Discover if the Natural Approach to Diet, Childbirth, Healing, and the Environment keeps us healthier and happier. Nate, welcome to Think.
Thank you so much, and well handled with that long subtitle. I'm impressed.
We have a lot of long subtitles on the show. I have to say, I was fascinated to read about how your parents approached the care and feeding of your family, in part because it could hardly be more different from my very conventional suburban middle-class American childhood. Talk a little bit about their philosophies on health and on well-being.
Well, my family really believed that it was healthier to embrace nature rather than trying to protect ourselves from nature with technology. And so I was born at home, and they made sure that all the food that was coming into the house was very organic, and we weren't allowed to have sugar. And we actually moved out of the city and moved into the country because as a kid, when I started walking, I started falling down and skinning my knees on the concrete. Hmm. And this was one more way in which technology was hurting children. And so my parents moved to somewhere where, in theory, the ground would be softer. some really kind of out there stuff. Like my parents, I didn't wear diapers at all as a baby. And my parents would just kind of follow me around because my father thought that having a diaper on, having this big wad of cloth between your legs for the entire time you're growing from zero to whatever, three, would actually warp the growing bones of the baby. And, these kind of things that maybe they make some sense or perhaps they're totally crazy. And so as you say, as I started making plans for my own family and preparing to be a father myself, I felt like I really had to go back and assess these things. You know, the diaper one wasn't that hard, but some of the others, there's a lot of interesting nuance.
Well, and it's interesting that your mom and dad arrived at these conclusions after having been raised in the sort of better living through chemistry 1950s.
Exactly. Well, you know, I think every generation rebels a little bit against their parents. And my folks had been raised in the better living through chemistry 1950s, the era when we were supposed to get power too cheap from uranium, and the medical advances were just astounding. This was when, you know, Jonas Salk had recently pioneered the vaccine for polio, and it just seemed like everything was getting amazingly better through technology. But in my parents' lifetime, as the rebellions of the 60s were happening, there was also a lot of backlash against technology. There was the backlash against nuclear power. There was Silent Spring was published, and people began worrying that better living through chemistry might in fact be precisely the wrong direction to be going. And so my parents were really carried by that tide over to the other extreme and over to the West Coast as well.
You remind us, though, and it feels like a very modern question to answer, a very modern debate, but the whole nature versus human intervention, human technology, is an ancient one that would seem to date back at least as far as the biblical story of the Garden of Eden.
Exactly, yeah. This is something that we've been fighting over every year since year zero, I think, or before. And And it you can see this kind of intellectual pendulum swinging back and forth broadly across the ages, from the Enlightenment, which was really a period of embracing rationality and embracing technology as a fix to every single problem. There was an idea that through rationality, we were going to put an end to war during the Enlightenment, and that there would we would there was one philosopher working on a language that would be impossible to lie in because it would just be so rational and perfect. And there was this really this feeling that all disagreement could be ended through science. And then it swung back in the opposite direction, and you had the Romantics saying, no, we really have to be guided by our feelings and embrace the ineffable beauty of nature. So you see this pendulum swinging back and forth as far back as you want to go.
Can you talk about your first realization as a kid that the way your parents did things was not necessarily the way everyone else did things? There was a swimming party that you went to?
Yes. Right. So as a little kid, of course, I had no idea that anything, any of this was out of the ordinary. And after my parents moved up to the country, I was about 5 years old, and this is just about the age when I start to really become conscious of things going on around me. Mm-hmm. And we went to this potluck out at a little lake near our new home, and we're meeting all these new people, and it's summer, and people are spooning up their chicken salad and their casseroles, and all of these kids are running up and down the beach, and I, of course, want to go swimming. And my parents say, oh, sure, go ahead and go on in. We didn't bring a swimsuit, but you can skinny dip. And this didn't seem like a problem to me at all, because nakedness was pretty much the norm in my household, as all natural goes in my household. We were really naked a lot, and I just never thought mm-hmm. anything of it.
Yeah.
And so I jump into the water. My little brother jumps into the water behind me, and there's this platform of kids, platform floating out on the lake that the kids are pushing each other off of, and it just looks so much fun, and I swim out there, and I jump up, and instead of just joining the fray, everything stops.
Hmm.
And then this little girl looks over and says, they're naked! And all the kids jumped off the other side and swam away. It was like I was one of those swamp creatures in a 1950s horror movie that, you know, lumbers up and destroys the beach party. And that was the first time. It was kind of this shocking moment where I realized, oh my gosh, there's something that's very different about my family.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if that difference is really doing me harm. Like, maybe we're just weird and messed up.
Well, what makes that story so great, Nate, is that, okay, so your family, you suddenly thought, well, they're different. But I wonder, on the other side, you know, there's no particular reason that an 8-year-old needs to be wearing a swimsuit. And I will say my kids always do. But you know what I'm saying? Like you almost have to, those of us reading the book that may have been raised in more conventional ways, need to maybe look at our assumptions at the same time.
That's my hope. I mean, these debates tend to be so polarized, you know, these ideas about natural birth and natural foods and alternative medicine, when people approach them, it's either totally credulous, and it's just like, yes, these things are wonderful, and kombucha will cure cancer, or it's totally dismissive, and there's a lot of really interesting stuff in between, and so I was hoping that in navigating that in-between space in a sort of humble way, I could bring people along with me and show them some of the interesting things beyond their assumptions.
So in the segments that come up, we'll talk about the individual things that you investigated. But I'm curious as to whether the one thing that, and I don't think I'm giving anything away here, there aren't any overwhelming, simple conclusions that come forth in the book. You sort of look at things and maybe there's more pros or more cons to each thing. Had you hoped at the outset of this project that you would be able to say, yes, column A will take this, this, and this, column B will take these things?
That certainly would have made it a lot easier to market the book if it could have been this kind of, this is all you need to know to live your life.
Right.
Nature is good.
Maybe less honest that way, but it would have sold more books.
Yeah, I think that, did I hope that from the outset that I would find something like that? I think maybe I did have some glimmer of hope that maybe I would find some real point that I could just sell. But I think I also knew that doesn't really fit with the reality, and that we just know from living in the world that there aren't real easy answers, mm-hmm. that you kind of end up having to muddle through with the best research that you can find.
Nathaniel Johnson is with us. He's a journalist who's written a new book called All Natural, A Skeptic's Quest to Discover If the Natural Approach to Diet, Childbirth, Healing, and the Environment Keeps Us Healthier and Happier. We'll come back to our conversation with Nathaniel Johnson in a couple of minutes. If you'd like to join it, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. We are joined now in the studio by senior producer Jeff Whittington. He is also host of Anything You Ever Wanted to Know. And of course, we are continuing what we hope will be a 7-day winter membership campaign. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. And it is New Member Monday. If you've been listening at all to the station today, you know that it's the fourth day of the 7-day KERA winter membership drive. Your new or renewing membership today, though, will help us reach the goal by the end of the week. But if you have not become a member before, your first-time contribution today in any amount will trigger an additional $50 contribution from the Philip R. Johnson Foundation. This is a way for you to make your contribution go even farther to help this station.
That is really amazing. So your contribution in any amount, so you could give $50 and essentially double that contribution with the $50 from the Philip.
Right. And I think it's further, actually. Your contribution would go further.
Did I say farther?
I said farther. Oh. It would go further to the...
this is the kind of conversation
I was going to get an email from somebody out there. So your contribution will go even further when you make it today. If you're a new member, if you've never joined before, call right now, 888-694-6931, or click and contribute at kera.org.
This is also very exciting. If you are a fan of Downton Abbey and these days, who isn't?
Oh.
We've got this really, I think this is kind of amazing. Okay, so if you make a $10 a month contribution, you will get the complete DVD set of season 3, which is the one that's taking place right now. That's at 1-888-694-6931 or kera.org. But wait, I feel
there's
like
more.
We're selling Ginsu knives here. But wait, $20 a month
do
contribution
Ginsu knives?
Gives you a great year of radio, and you will receive DVD sets of all 3 seasons thus far. So
wow.
If you know someone who has not yet jumped on the bandwagon, who says, what is this Downton Abbey stuff? I don't care about this. You can convert someone, or maybe you can just have the series for yourself. Go back and look at all the exciting things that have happened.
And if you've logged on to the Facebookosphere, the blogosphere, the Twittersphere, today, and you haven't seen last night's episode.
No spoilers,
but I got to say, I've seen it all, Chris. I've seen the entire season as part of my professional duties here at KERA. I was Bill Young, our VP of television. He, zip tied my hands to a chair and made me watch the entire season 3. So there's a lot going on in season 3, and you're going to want to watch these more than once. So make your $10 a month contribution right now at 888-694-6931 or online at kera.org and get the entire season 3 DVD of Downton Abbey.
Of course, your contribution really, most importantly, goes to pay for another great year of radio on KERA. You can make your contribution now at kera.org or call 1-888-694-6931. Back in 2 minutes with Nathaniel Johnson.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. New spring semester personal enrichment and professional development courses are now open and available for registration. You can learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is journalist Nathaniel Johnson. His new book is called All Natural, A Skeptic's Quest to Discover if the Natural Approach to Diet, Childbirth, Healing, and the Environment Keeps Us Healthier and Happier. Join us at 1-800-933-5372 or email think at kera.org. So, Nate, we know the United States is not like many other parts of the world, particularly the developing world, but you point out that in this country, more Americans now die from too much medical care than too little. Give us some perspective on that.
Yeah, this was really shocking to me, the idea that health care could make us sicker. The numbers are pretty striking. If you just look at the number of people who are killed from over-treatment in Medicare, those numbers are a little easier to collect. The best numbers on those is 30,000 a year, and compare that to 26,000 a year who die from lack of access to care from the Institute of Medicine. And that this doesn't even count, you know, if you're there's the estimate is that 100,000 people per year are killed by unnecessary drugs or misapplied drugs in the hospital, and 90,000 per year die from hospital-acquired infections. So that's that. I mean, the conventional story is that what we need is more, and if we just have the right health care, we'll get better. And every reform just needs to be adding more and not denying people the health care. But at this point, we're really grasping at so much that in some ways it's doing us more harm than good.
So let's talk about childbirth, which was a particularly salient question for you in this time before your daughter was born.
Yes.
What led you to at least question what some people consider to be the hyper-medicalized state of maternity care today?
Well, I mean, it started with just the fact that I was born at home, and that was my normal. The stories I was told about that were made it sound very warm and idyllic and easy. It was only when I started doing research for the book that I went and interrogated my parents more closely, and I found out that my mom had had a postpartum hemorrhage. And for a couple of really terrifying moments, my father had wondered if she was going to die. And so that's where I started out. I started out with this kind of mixed feeling about this idea. And when I began doing research, you know, the research, it really depends on the lens that you bring to it.
Yeah.
When you look through the small picture, or you look focus tightly on the moment of birth itself, it really makes a lot of sense to have every... you still there?
Yes.
Oh, every possible medical intervention at hand.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at the really big public health picture, I was really surprised to find that maternal mortality seems to be actually going up in this country. Some of the advances that we've made over the last 100 years now are eroding. In California, certainly, there's very good data showing that it's actually getting more dangerous to give birth. And as a country as a whole, it's very clear that injuries, severe injuries during birth have risen. The number of women that have heart attacks during labor has gone up 80% in the last 10 years. And so that terrified me, not to put too fine a point on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I began to wonder if, you know, if there might have been something to my parents' ideas that too much medicine during birth could cause problems.
I was surprised to read the research that you quoted, and you had a researcher who had sort of changed her position about fetal monitoring during labor, that it does not necessarily improve outcomes for newborns?
Right. The fetal monitoring, it does improve outcomes in higher risk situations. The data there is very clear, but when you're looking at a normal low-risk pregnancy, it doesn't actually improve outcomes. It doesn't improve, it doesn't lower the rate of injuries to babies, and it actually is likely to increase the rate of C-sections because there are false alarms, and you want to be on the safe side, so people end up going in when they don't really need to. And so that the story that I tell about this researcher, Deborah Bingham, is that she was working as a nurse in a labor and delivery unit, and she knew all of these things. She was doing this research, and she loved the fetal heart monitoring. She was one of the best people at interpreting the rhythms, and she would teach these other nurses. And it was only after she had a kid of her own and got to see what it was like from the mother's perspective that that she really changed her mind about this.
Hmm. How does the training of midwives compare with that of obstetricians?
Well, the training of obstetricians is much more intensive, certainly. They spend more time in school. They learn a lot more about how to react in emergencies. I shouldn't generalize too much about this question because there is a huge variation in the different schools, and mm-hmm. you know, there's all different types of midwives and all different types of OBs. But I think that to generalize a little bit, obstetricians, American obstetrics, tends to be focused. The bulk of our expertise is reactive. It's fixing things when they go wrong. And again, to generalize slightly, the model of midwifery is more focused on prevention mm-hmm. and trying to make sure that things don't go wrong in the first place.
So you're doing all this research and you're collecting information. And first of all, you write that none of it made you feel better one way or another about the choices that you had to make. And you found yourself, you thought, starting to sound kind of shrill. Like at one point you met an obstetrician who was pregnant at a party and started giving her advice.
I started to hate myself, really. It was a pediatrician, actually, and she was pregnant. And I had just come back from this reporting trip, and she was saying this, you know, what her plans were for her birth. And I was like, you know, you really should. I forget exactly what I told her she should be doing, but visualize this. Or, you know, I'd heard some technique from a midwife, and she just gave me this kind of withering look and told me this story about what sounded like a quack of an unlicensed midwife who had tried to cure this strep infection with garlic. Mm-hmm. And as a result, the woman who had the infection ended up, the garlic didn't work, and she passed it on to the baby, and the baby had brain damage. And that kind of dismissiveness is sort of par for the course in these discussions. And you can focus on those extreme examples, and there's much better examples. There's much smarter people than those quacks. But at that moment, I really realized that I shouldn't be giving advice to a pregnant pediatrician.
And so were you able to finally sort of go, and it was your wife experiencing it to a greater extent than you perhaps, but were you able to enjoy the experience of birth and labor and delivery of your daughter?
It was quite a process. My wife my wife deserves a lot more credit than I do. But yeah, during the labor and delivery, we ended up giving. She ended up giving birth in a hospital just a few blocks away from our house, where I'm sitting now. And but it's a program that's mainly run by midwives. And I was just, my mind wouldn't stop going. I kept grasping after solutions. I remember at one point, my wife Beth ended up getting an induction, chemically jump-starting labor. Mm-hmm. And so she was hooked up to the fetal monitor because then she's higher risk, and an IV and all these tubes. And it meant that she was in labor for days because the induction has to go really slowly in order not to increase the risk of C-section. And she was just intensely uncomfortable and worn out. And more than anything else, I really wanted to help. And, you know, it's the middle of the night. She's dozing in between the contractions, and I am not sleeping at all. My mind is just buzzing, and I'm making all of these contingency plans, and I'm... and these plans are insane. They're like escaping from the hospital and thinking, oh my gosh, all of this research that I've done, I should have just chucked it and I should have just gone with nature. But at the very same time, I really began to sympathize with American doctors, because that urge to help, to jump in and perform a miracle rather than just staying out of the miracle's way, is overwhelming. And if I had those skills, you know, I would have really wanted to do something. Hmm. And then at some point, when as the birth progressed, this my terror kind of became so overwhelming that I just kind of let go, and I realized that that the baby was coming, and I couldn't control it. Mm-hmm. I couldn't control whether everything would go perfectly or not. And
maybe that's the lesson for all of us on either side of this question.
Yeah, you know, the technological and the natural, although they're opposites, they're also the two sides of the same coin. They're mm-hmm. both ways of grasping at control. And families and babies and birth are fundamentally unpredictable, terrifyingly uncertain things. And that's what also makes them the reason for living as well. That's what makes life beautiful. Beauty and love and all those things that you can't control, we wouldn't really want to control them in the end.
Journalist Nathaniel Johnson is with us. His new book is called All Natural, A Skeptic's Quest to Discover If the Natural Approach to Diet, Childbirth, Healing, and the Environment Helps Keep Us Healthier and Happier, or Keeps Us Healthier and Happier. We'll come back to our conversation with Nate in a couple of minutes. You can join us at 800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. Jeff Whittington is back in the studio now. And Jeff, we do have copies of Nathaniel Johnson's new book, All Natural, available today with a membership contribution of $120. That is $10 a month on the sustaining membership plan. You can do it at kera.org or secure your copy by calling 1-888-694-6931.
Yeah, you can get your very own copy of All Natural, as Chris said, with a $120 contribution, or $10 a month as a sustaining member. If you've never joined the station before, this would be a great day to do it. It's the fourth day of our seven-day membership drive. You can help us reach the end of this drive by making your contribution right now. But it's also New Member Monday. So if you've never given to the station before, your first-time contribution in any amount will trigger an additional $50 from the Philip R. Johnson Foundation. So please, right now, go to kera.org, click and join there, or call 888-694-6931. And be sure and tell the person you talk to when you call that you're a first-time giver.
Your contribution to this station allows us to continue bringing you shows like Think, like Anything You Ever Wanted to Know, like Fresh Air, like The Diane Rehm Show, All Things Considered, Morning Edition, all the great stuff on the weekends. Today's discussion with Nate Johnson is really interesting to me because I think it typifies public radio in some ways. As he himself has said, he's done all this research. There aren't necessarily easy answers. And I think the beauty of public radio is that we serve you, an audience who understands understands that. You are not looking to be told this is right, this is wrong. You're looking for information that you can apply with your own intelligence and make up your own mind. And maybe your mind changes over time, but it's not our job to change it. It's just our job to bring you information. I love being involved in a project like Think and talking to people like Nathaniel Johnson. Your support makes it possible for there to be one place on the radio dial in North Texas where it's about what you understand and not about what we think you should know.
Just to let everybody know, it is, as we said earlier, the fourth day of KERA's seven-day membership campaign. That's 7 days if we reach the goal by Wednesday, so we would love to hear from you right now. We've heard from a few of you, Ken Swearingen and Gail Chapman in Plano. Thank you so much. We also heard from Vicki Giles in Fort Worth and Bobby Dunn in Cedar Park. All of those folks are entered to win the DC Getaway Sweepstakes. You'll get to do all the usual things if you win this trip that tourists do in the nation's capital. You and a companion would be able to visit the Washington Monument, the Lincoln Memorial, etc. But
there's much more.
That's right. If you win this trip, and everyone who makes a contribution during this winter membership campaign will be automatically entered. And this includes airfare, hotel, the works. And it also includes sitting in on the Diane Rehm Show, not as a guest, don't worry. You don't have to participate in the Friday News Roundup.
Diane's tough.
But you'll be able to witness it live and in person. And you'll also get to watch a broadcast of Morning Edition and All Things and or All Things Considered. So make your contribution right now at 888-694-6931 or join online at kera.org. You could be the winner of this Washington, D.C. trip giveaway. Somebody's going to win.
And you are entered regardless of whether or not you take a thank you gift. In fact, no contribution is absolutely necessary. But we know that if you make the call, if you love public radio enough that you'd want to go on this trip, then you love public radio enough to support KERA with a contribution in any amount. Even $5 or $10 a month is a really important thing to keep the programming that you love vital on KERA. Make your contribution now at kera.org or call 1-888-694-6931.
We'll be returning to Chris's conversation with Nathaniel Johnson here in about 2 minutes. And remember, you can get a copy of his book, All Natural, with your contribution today of $10 a month as a sustaining member or $120 all at once. Call 888-694-6931.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. New spring semester personal enrichment and professional development courses are now open and available for registration. You can learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with journalist Nathaniel Johnson, author of the new book All Natural, A Skeptic's Quest to Discover if the Natural Approach to Diet, Childbirth, Healing, and the Environment Keeps Us Healthier and Happier. Join the conversation at 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. And that's where we hear Nate from Mike in New York City, who asks, how do you feel about the increasingly popular decision to prescribe pharmaceuticals to treat depression, serotonin imbalance, etc., essentially prescribing happiness?
Well, first of all, depression is a serious thing, and I think that people deserve any lifeline that they can get in that situation, including the SSRIs, the serotonin-based drugs. But I do think that it's become a little bit facile, that it's become broader and broader, and the idea that you can go to your doctor and become happier from that is unlikely. from taking a drug, or there's some George Carlin quote. I'm going to mess it up, but it's like, you know, the idea that you can become happy by taking a drug is like the idea that you can feed yourself by taping sandwiches all over your body. I really think that, you know, we're a culture of fixers. We're, you know, we're Yankee innovators. We're Americans make new things, and we fix problems. And so the tendency is when we have a problem to look for a technical fix. And if we're feeling a little down, we often look to the doctor. And I think that that's a good thing. We should be talking to people when we're feeling down, and we should be seeking help. The problem is that often the best fix isn't a technical one. Often the best fix is a cultural one. It's the support of a community and a family and an ear to and good advice. And I'd really like to see that sort of thing more in our medical system.
So let's talk about food here. This has become a raging source of debate. And a few months ago, when there was a pretty large study that came out that found that organic produce is not necessarily more nutritious, and of course there were some explanations as to what nutritious means, but a lot of people were upset, a lot of people were disappointed. Some people said, I told you so. Talk a little bit about what you learned about the nutrition value of food, the risk of things like pesticides on conventionally grown produce.
Right. So This is actually a really interesting debate, and if there's one big takeaway from my book, if you can generalize an argument, it's this: that if you look at these issues through a very narrowly focused lens, so if you look at organic food just on the nutrient value, it's almost always going to make sense to take the more technological option. You know, we can measure how much vitamin A is in food, and our farmers are amazing, conventional or otherwise. They can maximize that. That's going to affect their bottom line, so they're going to do it. So it's no surprise to me that the basic nutrients are more or less equivalent. But if you look through the broad perspective at what's healthier, then it starts to make a little bit more sense. I think organic food really is healthier in a lot of ways. It's healthier to have farms that make the environment a more beautiful, sustainable place. It's healthier to have farms that are employing middle-class people rather than employing giant tycoon corporations and thousands of destitute laborers. It makes sense to have a little bit of balance with the ecosystem rather than constantly being on this treadmill to find the next weed killer and the next insect killer as they adapt resistance to it. So I think that there's a lot of good in organic food. It may not be the good that people want. It may not be that narrowly focused, selfish, I'm going to get more vitamin A from this. But, you know, who knows? There may be thousands of other little micronutrients that we're not measuring that that are just as important.
What were your parents' attitudes about vaccinations when you were growing up?
My parents were a little worried about vaccinations. They ended up getting both of us vaccinated. They looked at the science, and they felt like that was the right thing to do. But the town that I grew up in, there were definitely lots of people who weren't vaccinated, because we ended up moving to this very sort of alternative town in the country. Mm-hmm. And when I was writing about vaccination, I told the story of one of my friends because she wasn't vaccinated as a kid, and she grew up a little ways from where my house was in this very back to the land family that, you know, with off the grid, outhouse out back, hunting for their own food, and they really believed that it was much healthier to acquire immunity the old-fashioned way by getting sick. And then my friend did get sick. She got cancer, actually, when she was in her early 20s. And that was sort of a turning point for her. She lived this pure, natural life, and then she gets cancer. And so she, in the same way that I did, had mixed feelings. She had a lot of sympathy for her parents' ideas, but she was also skeptical. And then she had a baby. And she had to figure out how to reconcile these vague fears that she had about vaccination with the fact that the overwhelming message of the establishment was, obviously, you have to get the shot.
It doesn't necessarily make it wrong, but it is what you hear most commonly.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. The thing was that it was just so hard for her to get the kind of nitty-gritty answers that she really needed to feel comfortable making a decision one way or another. You know, there were all kinds of crazy back and forths on the internet that she could look up to. She went to four different doctors, and the doctors would hand her the basic, you know, sheet that they give you.
Right, like rather than listening to her, they would kind of roll their eyes and say, just read this.
Yeah, they'd say mm-hmm. that, or they would say, just do whatever you want to do. It's your decision.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't. Nobody really walked her through slowly and patiently enough that she really felt comfortable. And I'm sure, you know, there are amazing pediatricians out there that do that. But there is a real time crunch for doctors these days. And
mm-hmm.
They see someone asking about vaccines, and they think, "Oh my gosh, how long is this going to take me?" So she really had a hard time with that, and she actually asked for my help in researching the vaccines. And I was really surprised, actually, by what we found when we started digging into it, because I had thought that, you know, there are just so many smart, well-educated people that are nervous about vaccines. And I had thought that there would be at least some blind spot in the conventional wisdom. And when I went back and I looked at all of the different theories and the fears about overloading the immune system and predisposition to allergies and all of these things that people are worried about, autism, the science is really strong on all of these things in support of vaccination. And I really ended up feeling so comfortable and so much more relating to the authorities and feeling like they were the good guys in the end. And I even began to feel like vaccination was natural. You know, it's this form of communion with other life forms that we used to get from hanging around. You know, we'd get cowpox from
yeah.
cows, and
mm-hmm.
exactly, and then that protected people from smallpox. And now we've separated ourselves from this microbial soup to a large extent, but vaccination reacquaints our immune systems a little bit. It's a supplement for that lack, that absence that we used to have much more contact with these microbes.
The new book by journalist Nathaniel Johnson is called All Natural, A Skeptic's Quest to Discover if the Natural Approach to Diet, Childbirth, Healing, and the Environment Keeps Us Healthier and Happier. Nate, it's been wonderful to talk to you today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it.
Thanks to all of you listening this afternoon, and especially we want to thank those of you who are making contributions to keep KERA strong, to allow us to continue to bring you discussions like this one, and those with a host of people with interests and expertise on just about everything under the sun. Your contributions to KERA.org and at 1-888-694-6931 are, bar none, the biggest source of income we have to keep this program running strong, and we really appreciate your involvement with the station. We have lots of ways today to say thank you, Jeff Whittington, starting with Nathaniel Johnson's book, available at the $120 mm-hmm. level. And it is also, it's New Member Monday. This is quite a day. It's New Member Monday, and it is Downton Abbey what we need to have like an alliterative something.
We need a name for that too.
It's Downton Abbey Day.
Okay.
Downton Day. It's not doesn't sound as good. But the thank you gift we have associated with Downton Abbey is fantastic.
It is. We have if you've been watching Downton Abbey, you may know that the series is the most successful series in the Masterpiece series history on PBS. Two Emmys for Maggie Smith, the Screen Actors Guild Award for the Best Ensemble in a Series. Everyone's talking about it, especially today. We're not going to talk about, in case you haven't seen last night's episode that was broadcast, we're not going to talk about what happened. But if you're waiting to see it, you might avoid the Twitter sphere and Facebook and everything else, because it's been an exciting season already. And if you make a $120 contribution today, $10 a month, we will thank you with your very own DVD copy of the entire set of episodes from Season 3, the one that's running right now on PBS. You will have that to share, to watch again, et cetera. And if you make a $240 contribution, that's $20 a month, $20 a month for your public radio station, and we'll send you the entire series, Seasons 1, 2, and 3, on DVD.
That's perfect. First of all, your gift of support to KERA is huge. It's perfect to catch yourself up or maybe catch up someone else who has not gotten into the phenomenon that is Downton Abbey. Don't forget that it's also New Member Monday. So if you are joining the station for the first time, we have a really amazing offer from the Philip R. Johnson Foundation. For every new first-time contribution, there will be an additional $50 gift from the Philip R. Johnson Foundation. So if you join today for the very first time, your contribution will stretch that much further. It is really easy to do. You'll find with a first-time membership, we are very thankful. You'll find you feel connected to this station that you love in an even more profound way. And it only takes about 2 minutes of your time online at kera.org or over the phone at 1-888-694-6931.
I want to thank Donna Ross in Frisco, Mary and Brett Gall in Dallas, and I think that's Romy Michelle Unger in Dallas. Thanks so much to each of you for making your contribution to KERA during the show today. Maybe you picked up a copy of All Natural, our guest's book for the hour. That's available again at the $120 membership level, or you can get Season 3 of Downton Abbey at that same level, $10 a month as a sustaining member of the station. And we'll send you all three seasons of Downton Abbey, the complete series up to this point, or up to the end of this season, I guess I should say, with a $20 a month contribution. Just call 888-694-6931 or join online at kera.org. And if you call, be sure and tell the person you talk to that you're joining for the first time so we can make sure and get that $50 match in your honor from the Philip R. Johnson Foundation, because it is New Member Monday. We're doing this today, and the Philip R. Johnson Foundation has generously agreed to give the station $50 for every additional new member today. So if you've never joined before, this is a perfect time to do it and really make a difference.
If you are in a position to be a new member, that is, you've never joined before, but you listen all the time, maybe you've sort of done the calculations in your head and you thought, well, why would I give money to this station when I can just listen for free? Well, there are a couple of reasons. One, because KERA is really important to you. It serves a value in your life. It provides you with information. A membership to KERA can be at any level that you choose, so any amount of money is welcome, and we are thrilled to have you on board. And the reality is, you know, considering all the national programming that runs on this station that we pay for according to how big our audience is, actually, the fact that you are listening does increase the expenses that KERA has. If you can just help to defray those expenses, contribute an amount of money that allows you to listen to this wonderful programming and also sort of serves the entire community, now is the time to do it. There's never been a better time to become a new member of KERA.
1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number. Again, it's the KERA 7-day winter membership campaign. You can check our progress and click and join as well at kera.org. While you're there, there's a banner for the 7-word essay. You can give us your thoughts in 7 words about why you love or listen to or support, more importantly, KERA. Go to kera.org and check that out. And please, while you're there, make your contribution of support.
1-888-694-6931 or online at kera.org. Thanks.